Uncarved, Terracita Uncarved, Mr. Thorpe and Ms. Upright. Where is Thorpe?
Walt Thorpe on behalf of Mr. Amkar, Your Honors. May it please the Court, the Uniform Services Former Spouses Protection Act, USFSPA, renders the circuit court order in this case unenforceable. It preempts state courts from dividing a veteran's military disability compensation as marital property.
I neglected to ask if you want to reserve any time for rebuttal. Would you care to do so?
No, Your Honor,
right,
that's fine. Disability is expressly excluded by 10 U.S.C. 1408A4B. That also was the holding earlier this year by the U.S. Supreme Court in Howell v. Howell. Uncontroverted testimony was that Mr. Amkar was retired by the Secretary of the Air Force on June 27th of 14 because he's 100% disabled. That's also in the DFAS record that was made, DFAS letters made part of the record. Disability was even conceded by opposing counsel in the circuit court. As a 100% disabled veteran under Chapter 61, 10 U.S.C. 1201.
Let me just ask you a brief question.
Sure, Your Honor.
Argument. Is there anywhere in the record where your client preserved this argument aside from the motion to reconsider?
We preserved it in the motion to reconsider only, Your Honor. It was, however, the arguments were made in the lower court. As a 100% disabled veteran under Chapter 61, 10 U.S.C. 1201, pursuant to 10 U.S.C. 1408, he doesn't receive a penny in longevity-based regular retirement. He only receives disability. Disability is not longevity. Disability is specifically excluded by the federal definition of what is disposable. The disability retirement of the disability retirement of a 100% disabled veteran is capped by the federal code at an amount computed as his total by his total time in service.
Let me interrupt if I can. I'm curious as to why we need to even care about all these regulations that the military has if the agreement here is a two-party agreement between the husband and the wife that says, I think this is the basis for the trial for the circuit court's decision, that says that by agreement of the parties, husband shall pay to wife for his share of her military retirement pension an amount equal to 50% of the marital share of the net monthly retirement payment, etc. So in other words, the Department of Defense is not a party to this agreement. The agreement binds him. Now, obviously, if the department cuts the check directly to her, that's one thing. It probably satisfies the agreement. But if for whatever reason they don't, isn't that agreement still binding on the husband?
No, Your Honor, because for a very simple reason, because you've got to address disability as opposed to regular retirement. Regular retirement is longevity-based. Disability is not.
You can't distinguish between those two sources of retirement, did it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The property settlement agreement didn't discuss disability versus regular retirement.
No, it did not. And because it did not address that, it did not speak to that, then disability is not part of it at all. What she has a right to.
Well, the military classifies this as a retirement benefit, disability retirement, which, as I understand the way they do things in the military, they simply, the individual is no longer on active duty. He's retired as far as the military is concerned, but he's receiving disability pay because he otherwise would not be eligible to fully retire.
No, you can retire on disability at any time. An active duty military person can become 100% disabled by combat action or by accident for any reason.
In the civilian world, when you get when you're when the when you make a workers' compensation claim for this full or partial disability, they're paying your regular salary. It's as if you're still employed or partially employed, I guess, to extend your disability, which is completely separate from being retired. You're basically still an employee of the company. You're just simply on a disability, full or partial. That's not the way the military does things, as I understand it. They put you out to pasture as if you were retired, but they call it disability retirement pay. So
and
is this a distinction without a difference in terms of the PSA, I guess?
No, Your Honor, it's not a distinction without a difference because the code is very specific about what disability is. It defines disposable pay and specifically excludes disability. Disability, of course, can come in a couple different fashions. It can come as part of what the service has to pay the person, and it can also come at VA waiver. But the point is, the individual, when they retire, must waive that percentage. If the person were to retire at 50%, they would waive 50%. That would make the remaining 50% regular retirement. But the 50% that is disability retirement is not subject to state distribution. It is preempted by Mansell. And that was upheld just recently in Howell. And in his case, he was 100% disabled. So 100% of his pay was waived for disability. None of the pay that he receives, not one penny, is regular longevity-based retirement. It is all disability. Again, that was the evidence at trial, that was the testimony, that is what DFAS letters say, that was uncontroverted. He's 100% disabled. 100% of his pay is disability, not regular retirement. He gets no regular retirement. Now, I suppose the argument, of course, in a lot of the cases before that Virginia has heard is if there is saving language in the PSA, then the disability can also be divided. But in this case, there is no saving language in the PSA. It's not subject to division. It's preempted. All disability is preempted. That was the intent of Congress, clearly stated intent of Congress.
Well, we don't care so much for our purposes about the intent of Congress. Our concern is the intent of the parties in the PSA, it seems to me. Because clearly your client could bargain away any or all federal benefits he might be entitled to.
Of course, but he would have to say so in his PSA, and that was not addressed. He did not do that. Now, it appears that the court tried to find some intent by pointing to the quadro, otherwise known as a defense pension distribution order, DPRO, which is the same thing as a quadro, pointed to that. But the quadro is an enforcement mechanism only. This court has already spoken to that. It's a enforcement mechanism only. It can't change what the divorce decree says or what the property separation agreement says. It can't put disability in there where it is not. There, so it can't change it, and that's understandable because the DPRO was not signed by the parties; it was signed by the attorneys. The PSA is very specific about what can create a modification of the PSA. It says it has to be in writing, signed by both parties, and there was no such modification. Now, I asked the court at the time to point specifically to the language in the PSA that authorized division of disability, and the court never did that. Well, it's understandable why, because it's just not there. There is no savings language. There is no indemnification clause. There is nothing that will say Mr. Amkar will make her whole if subsequent events mean that she won't get what she had expected in regular longevity-based retirement, but that it would only be disability. Now, argument in this case can be made in Virginia. I think the cases that were pointed to was Owens, Hubble, and McClellan, but the OMCAR PSA spoke only to regular retirement, and like I said, I specifically asked the court for that. The fact is there's no indemnification, no guarantee language. You have the recent decision in Howe that prevents a state court from dividing a veteran to indemnify the spouse for loss. In fact, Minnesota has already overturned its cases on that decision. No doubt Ms. Omkar expected and wanted half of whatever Mr. Omkar would receive after he was retired, but that's why we're here. But it all became disability after the divorce when he was deemed 100% disabled and mandatorily retired.
Let me interrupt you. In McClellan, property settlement agreement did not drew the distinction between disability and regular retirement pay.
But McClellan specifically stated disability could not be divided. There's actually a statement to that effect in the McClellan case. Quote, disposable retired pay does not include his disability retirement pay. And that's a direct quote from McClellan. It's also in Moon, Your Honor. The disability and retirement are not identical. They're not the same thing. There's what's called disability retirement. It is based on disability. Now, the amount that is determined that the person gets is based on, first of all, what their disability is. In his case, it's 100%. But it's also based on the fact that he is disabled, not the fact that there's longevity. Now, an amount is determined based on the fact that he could have retired anyway had he not been disabled.
The agreement said retirement pay and disability pay would be divided so-and-so. Would your argument be the same?
If it said that, we'd be dead in the water, Your Honor, because that's what the case law is very clear on in the state of Virginia. And in fact, in many of the other states around the country, it's very clear on that. But you've got to divide them both. You can't just divide regular retirement. Regular retirement is not disability. It's by law specifically excluded. Now, there's also the issue of disposable pay. That was what was where the exclusion is in the definition of disposable pay. Now, the court ordered disposable retirement, disposable disability retirement pay be divided. So it ordered division of disability without authority to do that in the order. And later it kind of revised its term to say disability retirement pay and left off the disposable, but they're both essentially the same thing. Disposable is not disability, and disability is not divisible. And since the PSA didn't address disability, the court would actually be in a point where it would have to find ambiguity in the contract in order to rewrite a material term, and it made no such finding of ambiguity. Ms. Somkar argued that concurrent retired and disability pay made some of Omkar's disability divisible. Well, that would be correct for a veteran with disability below 100%, but that's not the case here. The disability pay in a Chapter 61 retiree is capped at the maximum amount he could have received had he retired regularly due to longevity. And he didn't. So it's not divisible. Even as a category of CRDP, CRDP is something that every disabled retiree gets as a categorization that categorizes what they get, but it does not magically transmogrify or change the nature of the money that he's getting. He's getting only disability. Disability can't be divided. That's preempted by Mansell. It can't be divided. It was upheld by Howell. Further, the order said that they're going to, or he ordered a retroactive. Well, you know, it follows if the court didn't have the authority to divide disability pay in the first place, it certainly couldn't order order retroactively a benefit in disability pay either. So the court was without authority.
Before you sit down, have y'all heard on the motion to rehear before the government? Have you heard it?
No, we have not.
And that could be forever, I guess.
They often take quite a while. But I would point out, Your Honor, that that is an administrative decision before DOHA, Department of Hearings and Appeals. That's not binding to this court, obviously. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. Cindy Upright for the appellee, Ms. Teresita Omkar. With all due respect to opposing counsel, other than his argument that the court impermissibly modified the party's agreement, which a clear reference to the record would show that they did not, opposing counsel had the opportunity to present that issue directly to the trial court as the matter was being decided. He was under the impression that the trial court was deferring to the Military Pension Division order trying to ascertain the party's intention. He brought that up immediately to the trial court during the decision, and the trial court said, okay, we're not going to do that. I'm going directly back to the language of the PSA that's in the record. So the court has not impermissibly modified the party's agreement, and I think that matter is resolved relatively quickly. With respect...
What's your answer to Mr. Thorpe's... Well, I understood at least Mr. Thorpe's argument that the PSA refers to basically retirement generally, and the federal, or at least the military, draws this distinction. They call it disability retirement, but it's not really retirement. It's just labeled as such, and therefore that makes all the difference in the world. What's your response to that?
It is retirement pay, period. Whether it's longevity-based or whether it's disability-based, it's all military retirement. Doesn't matter which form it's in. And the fact that the parties did not expressly exclude it from the PSA means that the PSA is all-inclusive. They did not expressly exclude disability. They didn't mention that word at all at any point. And with all due respect, family law practitioners, whether they're newly involved in the Division of Military Retirement or proficient in it, understand the meaning of disposable retired pay. We draft PSAs every day, and in the Division of Military Retirement, almost always, especially if we're representing the retiree themselves, we include the language disposable retired pay. Spouse gets a marital share of the disposable retired pay. And using that term in and of itself immediately restricts and limits what the former spouse can get, because automatically you refer to 1408 and you see, okay, well, she can't get his VA waiver, she can't get disability retirement. But the parties here did not do that. That term was not used, and neither was the term disability. The parties explicitly said, actually about three or four times in that one singular paragraph, wife is entitled to a share of husband's military retirement. Husband's military retirement is marital property. Wife gets a share of his net retirement payment. And, Your Honor, that's exactly what the trial court did here. They gave her exactly her 31.7% share of his net retirement payment. And, Your Honor, opposing counsel has relied solely on Mansell, and then subsequently this court's ruling in Lambert immediately thereafter, which incorporated the holding in Mansell. But those cases have no application to the case here. Mansell and Lambert both stood for the proposition that a state court has no authority in fashioning an equitable distribution award to award a former spouse military, or excuse me, VA disability compensation or a portion thereof, amounts waived by a retiree in exchange for VA disability or military disability retirement. I will point out, Manziel, neither Lambert or Manziel specifically spoke to military disability retirement. They spoke to VA disability compensation. There's a huge difference between the two. A retiree from the military gets retirement based on whether they were disabled, whether they served, and then if they subsequently go and apply for VA disability compensation, that can affect the amount of retirement they get, but that is an entirely separate award to that person. And this case doesn't concern VA disability at all. Ms. Omkar has never sought a portion of any amounts that he's waived, any amounts that he receives from the VA, and this case strictly focuses on the retirement that he receives from the military.
Counsel, if I might interrupt, did the appellant comply with Rule 5820C?
No.
You want
to
talk about that?
The Supreme Court of Virginia has held, in my understanding, more than once, but most importantly in Brandon versus Cox, that the filing of a motion for reconsideration is not sufficient. Simply putting it before the clerk and filing it isn't enough to preserve the arguments for appeal. And in the appellant's brief submitted to this court, first and foremost, in the opening brief that he submitted, he didn't even note in the record where he preserved his assignments of error. This court graciously gave him a second opportunity to fix that, and in doing so, he noted simply that he had preserved them in the motion for reconsideration. The motion for reconsideration was timely filed, but after that, he did absolutely nothing to bring the matter before the court. And the court is routinely focused on whether or not the trial court had an opportunity to rule before the 21 days expired. And the 21 days expired without the appellant.
Or if an order is entered modifying, vacating.
Yes, absolutely. And there was no such order here. And so the motion for reconsideration, he never asked the court to place that motion on the docket, to have it heard before the 21 days. And under Brandon, Your Honor, it's my position that that motion for reconsideration is essentially dead. And if that's all that he's relied on to preserve the arguments for appeal, the arguments have not been preserved. Going back to my previous argument, McClellan controls here. McClellan was decided 17 years ago. It has never been distinguished. It has never been overruled. And quite frankly, it's actually been cited by multiple other jurisdictions, including South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Oregon, for the same premise that although a state court under Manziel and Lambert cannot divide more than the disposable retired pay of a military retiree, the parties can divide it if they choose to do so. And if there is no distinction made in the parties' agreement, then it is deemed to have included disability retirement pay.
The facts in McClellan.
Yes. The facts of McClellan almost very, very closely mirror exactly what has occurred here. The parties made no distinction, and the other most important factor is that the parties also agreed to a direct payment from Mr. Omkar himself to his former spouse. So it is not necessary that the government pay her because he agreed and he's bound by that obligation. The other argument that was made in support of our position is actually, it's an argument in the alternative. In the event that this court is inclined to believe that the parties excluded disability retirement pay and that she's not entitled to any portion of that, our other argument in the alternative, and it's the argument that was presented to the Department of Defense, was that he is not actually receiving disability retirement pay. He is entitled to concurrent retirement and disability pay under 10 U.S.C. 1414. And what that law permits, it was enacted in 2004, and what it permits is for a military retiree who has served for more than 20 years to now receive that longevity retirement and VA disability compensation. Prior to that, prior to 2004, you could not receive both. You couldn't receive disability retirement pay and VA disability, and you couldn't receive military retirement pay for longevity and VA disability, which that didn't make much sense. Why would I give up my military retirement that I've earned for my 20-plus years of service for disability compensation. It certainly makes sense to require someone who's receiving disability retirement pay to give up that in exchange for disability compensation, because that's a dual compensation for an overlapping purpose, and that has never been permitted. The law has never allowed a military retiree to receive both military disability pay and VA disability compensation, and the record is very, very clear that Mr. Umpaw receives both. And under the language of the special rule that was enacted for disability retirees, he is only allowed to receive what he would have earned for his length of service. And that is exactly what he receives. He's entitled to 57.5% of his military retirement. He receives only 50.5% because he elected a career service bonus earlier in his career after 15 years. And 50.5% of his final base pay when he retired is 2208, which is his CRDP. It's shown on his military retiree statements. And the court awarded her 31.7% of that, or $699.94.
Counsel, let me go back to the appeal on the motion to reconsider. If on the motion to reconsider they find for your client, isn't this court's decision moot?
The
she gets what she wants.
If the motion for reconsideration before the Department of Defense? I don't think this case is moot. I mean, obviously, she gets what she gets. It's certainly not moot right now. It would be moot if that was decided.
No, it's more of a theoretical question because they haven't ruled.
Yes.
But if she gets what she wants, it doesn't make any difference what we do.
Yes, that is true.
The converse, though, isn't true.
The converse is not true. Yes, because if they overrule, they've already decided in their favor once. If DOD now comes back and decides to overrule that and say, no, she doesn't get it, then obviously what this court does is extremely important, because then we go back exactly to the first argument, which is what was the language of the agreement.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And so, Your Honor, it's my position, first of all, that I don't believe that the appellant has preserved any of these arguments for appeal. That's my initial argument to the court. I made that in a motion to dismiss this matter because I don't think, even given the second chance, he did that. Should the court allow the case to go beyond that and hear it on its merits, as I said initially, first and foremost, this is not a state court award of disability retirement pay. This is a private contract between two consenting parties that fails to mention in any way, fails to exclude disability retirement pay, and McClellan controls. McClellan is very, very clear that the parties can bind themselves to obligations that a court could not impose, and quite frankly, parties do it all the time. They bind themselves to child support obligations. They bind themselves to pay college expenses, and all those things can be distinguished. It's still the same understanding. And so here the parties bound themselves to an obligation where they could have very explicitly excluded disability retirement pay, and they failed to do so. And Manziel and Lambert and even Howell, which was decided earlier this year, have no bearing. Howell dealt directly with indemnification provisions. An indemnification provision in this case is not necessary. They did not need a savings clause because they did not explicitly exclude disability retirement pay in the first place. Secondly, it's the same argument presented to the Department of Defense, which is that even if this were to be deemed to be excluded from the PSA for whatever reason, if the court were inclined to believe that it's disability retirement pay, my argument in response to that is that it is not. He cannot receive military disability pay and VA disability pay. He is receiving exactly to the penny what he would get for his years of service to the military. And longevity military retired pay has always been divisible to a former spouse. Always. It's never been excluded, unless we go pre-McCarty way back in the 80s. But at this point, it's always been divisible to a former spouse, and it's very clearly divisible under the language of the PSA. Even if you did decide that it excluded disability, it does not exclude retirement pay for longevity, and she's entitled to receive that money. The trial court awarded her exactly that, to the penny. I will say that the trial court's use of the word disposable in their ruling was rather inartful. But it doesn't change the result of the case. The result of the case is that the court gave her exactly what she was entitled to receive under the agreement. They did not modify that. They did not look outside of the party's agreement to the MPDO to determine or ascertain the intent of the parties.
All right, we will come down to recounsel and take up the matter of Scott versus Commonwealth.